You are now listening to the Bullseye Podcast brought to you by AFI Advisors. Sit back, get comfy, and keep all arms and legs inside the vehicle when in motion. And now, here is Josh, Peter, and Brian.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Bullseye Podcast brought to you by AFI Advisors. I am Josh Shores, here with Peter Raber.
Hello.
Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
We're missing our third musketeer.
Yeah.
Brian decided he wanted to take a vacation. So good for him, I guess.
Yeah.
I've been seeing, it seems like they're having a good time down there. I don't even know where he went. You know where he went?
Some beach. I saw a beach.
Some beach somewhere. One of the coasts, yeah. Probably.
Still, the right answer.
Yeah.
Beach.
So it's just the two of us here. I am dragging today. This is Friday, the
2nd
of June. It's June. Wow.
Yeah, second quarter is almost done.
Yeah. We had the Chamber Golf Tournament yesterday.
How'd that go?
It was amazing, but I'm so tired.
Those are draining long events. You guys had good weather for it, though.
It was a great day. It was a really great day, and there were so many people there. And got to meet and interact with a lot of folks and see a bunch of people not seen in a long time and kind of catch up with people. I got there around 7 a.m. and I didn't walk into my home until 8:30 p.m.
It's a long day, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, it was hot.
Yeah.
We had volunteers out there with the chamber doing some hole watching for, I think it was $25,000, a hole in one hole.
Okay.
No.
So you were making sure that nobody kicked the ball in right there at the end?
Yeah. So it is it's a policy.
Insurance policy,
essentially. And our friend Mindy, her company, Edwards Tipton Witt.
Yep.
They sponsored the hole in one hole. And I think there's somewhere in the contract language that there has to be two witnesses.
That makes sense.
To it.
Yeah.
Non-playing witnesses, not your, your drunk buddies,
right,
saying, I swear it went in. So it was really important to cover that spread there for having two people out there at all times, but
nobody hit it.
No, nobody.
Anybody
hit
even
it.
Close?
I think the closest was maybe 7 feet.
Wow.
Which is, it's a good shot,
yeah,
but I don't think that's really considered close in a hole-in-one challenge.
Right.
On a par three. So it was funny, but we got some incredible funny stories back from the volunteers when they came back. Because I remember, we would shuttle them out there in different flights. Like, they'd do an hour or two and then come back and someone else would go. And they always wanted to set in these terrible places, and a lot of them aren't necessarily familiar with golf, so I had to explain to them, if you sit there, you will die.
Yeah,
like,
you're getting
someone
hit.
Will hit you, and they're like, surely they won't hit it. I'm like, trust me,
right,
you will die. You're going to take, an 8-iron bladed straight to the head.
Well, it's not like we've got all the Tiger Woodses of the world in Kingsport, Tennessee. So if they're anything like me, I see something and it becomes my target, whether it should be or not. And I think your subconscious takes over and you're like, oh, I'm going to hit it right at that person.
Yeah.
It's kind of like telling somebody, don't picture the elephant or don't look down or whatever it is. Don't hit that person behind the green.
don't crack this person's skull open. So we were able to find them a huge tree to kind of use as a shield. But they did tell us that they got a couple of balls that whizzed by. The other part of it is you got to think there's a hole beside where people are coming up the other direction.
Right, so you should get hit in the back of the head.
Yeah, this is dangerous stuff here. Maybe we should wear helmets.
Probably not a bad idea. There was a video going around a while back. There was a, this is such a dad move to do, right? But there's a family who lived on a golf course, and anytime they were out on their back porch and people were playing, if a ball drifted into their yard, their house was, I guess, covered enough that you couldn't see him do it, he'd run down into the yard and lay down like he got hit in the back of the head.
There was a video, I think on Facebook a few days ago. I saw that where a guy did that.
Yeah, and it's hilarious. But
that would be terrifying as a golfer.
You walk up and think,
You're like, well, here, I'm in trouble.
Yep. So. Yeah. I'm awful at golf, so I would just assume that I had done it too.
Yeah. It's fun to watch people, you know, who, you know, aren't good. It's fun to watch. And there's
there's karaoke too.
Yeah. And I could literally sit out there and watch that hole all day and just, you know, interact with people, chat with everyone. Everyone's having a great time. So it was a good event.
Saw a lot of koozies going around.
Yeah. We've got so many koozies everywhere, and everyone's given such good feedback, but they may be lying to me because they don't want to hurt my feelings about what it looks like.
It looks good.
But everybody, and I actually, there's a couple people that reached out, and I need to mail some out. I'll probably do that Monday.
Okay.
Got some people requesting those, and I guess if anybody else wants a koozie, just email us at connect@afiadvisors.com.
Yeah, we've got plenty.
We've got a lot. There's a lot over here, and they do me no good sitting in my messy office.
Say something nice. Maybe we'll sign it.
Maybe. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we will autograph it, and that will instantly decrease the value of the koozie.
It's like driving a car off the lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I want to circle back to something we were talking about earlier because this is so relevant. I know we've talked for weeks about the debt ceiling.
Yes.
And everything that's been going on with that, the mass amount of confusion and the back and forth of who's going to give, who's going to budge. We got some good news.
We did.
Drum roll.
Yep. We have passed the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling bill has passed both the House and the Senate. Today's Friday. The president is going to sign it this evening, and everybody will get their Social Security checks that would not have gone out next Tuesday. Those will all go out, so that's a good thing. It was one of those deals that you got complaints from both sides, so it probably means it was the right place. So both sides gave a little bit, and now both sides will spin it that they got the better deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was passed with bipartisan measures in both the House and the Senate. And so what it functionally does is, and it pushes the debt ceiling out so we don't have to have this stupid conversation until January of 2025. So after the election, one of the first things that's going to have to get done by the incoming president or the remaining president will be to pass a debt ceiling.
So obviously that's going to be a huge platform in the next presidential race. What to do or how to approach that.
Right.
That debt ceiling coming up again.
Again.
Yeah.
But neither side will have to look bad before the voting starts. So it'll be debate, not you throw our country off a cliff type thing.
Sure.
It does a few things that the Republicans were looking for in that it caps spending at existing levels. So the way these budgets tend to work is, let's say, the education department, and this probably isn't a rational expense, but let's say they had budgeted $200 billion in support of textbooks for elementary schools, whatever it is. The next year, that probably was $210 billion, then $220, and then $230, and you know they index up when these things are voted on. And what it does is it caps that spending at 2023 levels, 2024 levels. So instead of having these automatic increases, we're just spending what we've, you know, kind of locked in. So that slows the space of or rate of spending. It doesn't touch defense spending, which was a big thing for the Republican Party. It also rolls back some money that was being sent to the IRS, which was going to be used for, I guess, increased audit control.
Speaking of them, am I finally going to get my IRS money now?
Yeah, Brian's on vacation.
Now that they've checked this off the list.
You should. Somewhere in there.
They'll stop holding it hostage, give it back.
You would hope. And the other thing it did was it pulled back unspent COVID money. So we voted on all this money to be spent for COVID relief. And there's been, I don't know, $29 billion or something like that that hasn't been spent yet. So rather than allowing that to just sit there and get spent without control, it comes back. The Democrats got the increase in the debt ceiling now past the election, so it's not hanging over President Biden's head. It wasn't clean, which is what they wanted. They just wanted a straight rise to the debt ceiling. And it does a few other things. It protects the student loan forgiveness program and allows the Supreme Court to decide on that. The Republicans wanted this bill to kill it completely. Right. So it protects the ability for the Supreme Court to rule on it. But it does enforce, and this is something people need to be aware of, there will be no more extensions on not paying these things. So I think it's, I'd have to go back and reread the bill's language, but I think it's after June or July 30th, you've got 30 days to start making your payments again. So there will be no more extensions to the student loan payment forgiveness. So people need to get ready for their budgets, you know, for that to start hitting.
Well, my student loans are paid for now, but have people been on pause with with those payments? So they've not been obligated to make those.
Correct.
But what you're saying is now, come June...
End of June, I think a 30-day timer starts, or end of July, somewhere in there. I'd have to go back and read. But okay. Yeah, you're going to have to start making these payments again. So this was one of those things that during COVID, they said, okay, don't make your payments, because us as the federal government would rather you have that money since you're out of work, since we're telling you you can't work. Use that in your budget.
Right.
And so we keep delaying that. Like, you'd get a six-month extension. And so when the initial proposal went out on the student loan relief was delay it again, because if we're just going to forgive it, you know, people aren't going to make their payments anyway. So this should be something that actually is disinflationary, in that people will no longer have that money to go buy groceries and put it into the economy. They'll have to send it to, this only applies to federal student loans, they'll have to send it to the federal government, and they'll get the money in and be able to do what they do.
In theory would help on the inflation portion of everything that's going on right now.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the deficit and all that sort of stuff.
That's really important.
Yeah.
People need to be aware of that. So we'll try our best to get the word out and also try to keep people updated as maybe things advance with that. I guess you never really know what may come to be with it, but I also know that, you know, even if the Supreme Court is going to rule on it one way or the other, I've found that the judicial system does not move very fast.
Not at all. No.
So, you know, don't be sitting at home banking on your student loans going away.
Right.
I guess is essentially what I'm trying to say.
And you know, honestly, these people took out their loans. They need to start paying them back at some point.
Right.
So, yeah, that's going to be a big thing. The market, extremely pleased with this whole thing.
Yeah, it's up. Market's up.
Yeah, so today we had a job report where we added significantly more jobs than were expected. So the theory that the Federal Reserve has killed the economy, that it goes against that. So you combine that and the debt ceiling passing, we're up about 600, 700 points today on the Dow Jones. And so there's been this limbo of, are they going to pass it? Are they going to pass it? Are they, oh God, we're getting close. You know, and we were even telling people, look, if you can't take the risk of holding through it, let's sit this one out on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And so there's a relief rally kind of happening today. We'll see how much of that carries through next week. I think now we can just get back focused on where's the economy at? What's happening in Russia, Ukraine? What's happening in China, Taiwan? Those type things, rather than this just artificially made argument going on in Washington that, you know, it really could have done tremendous damage to the economy. So I'm glad they got that settled. Hopefully now we can just have a nice boring summer on the stock market
and everything calm down.
Yep.
That's funny, but you had to know, I think, that it was going to go down to the wire probably. It seemed like one of those things where I almost see it kind of like a poker game.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, but neither side was going to show their hand until the last minute, it seemed.
Yeah.
But either way, I'm glad that we have found a way to push through that. So that's really encouraging. The market rise is really encouraging too. So I'm right there with you. Hopefully it's a really boring, yeah, normal summer, and we could
use a boring part of this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a roller coaster, to say the least.
Yeah, and now, you know, you've got the whole, and this may be a new expression for you, the sell in May and go away crowd. You know, so
sell in May and go away.
So there is if you go back and look at the monthly returns on the stock market, typically the summer not the best.
Yeah.
On average, the stock market is up every month. But there are certain months, and most of them fall in the summer, where we're down 0.5% or something like that. And so there is a huge following of people who sell their entire portfolio when May ends and don't come back in until September, October.
Wow.
And they hope to get like the Santa Claus rally, the spending that happens at the end of the year, all this, that, and the other. So, but you also have all the Wall Street traders are going on their vacations. I mean, everything slows down in the summer in America just because of the way our society is set up. So it affects the stock market too.
I think that it's time to transition into our new series called Financial Confessions.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which we've been getting the word out about this, and we talked about it on the last episode, kind of wanting to use this as a way to learn from other people's mistakes before you get into that situation yourself. We did promise people total anonymity.
Yep. Names have been changed for their own protection.
The names have been changed. We won't even use the names. It's fine. We won't use names, period.
We'll just say
person.
Yeah.
Person A, person B. But we did have a few of those come in that I wanted to take a little bit of time here on the second half of this podcast to address. And there was the first one that really caught my attention had to do with the purchase of homes.
Yeah.
And this person wrote to us essentially saying this. They were pre-approved when purchasing a home. I think it was $350, okay, something right, like that, pre-approval. So naturally, they do what every American does, and they go start looking at homes, $350,000.
Right, because we're going to talk them down.
Right, but, yeah, you know, so, but one thing that seemed to cause them trouble was they eventually did close on a home in that higher echelon of their price range, and it put them in a bit of a financial bind on the back end.
Yeah.
So after,
quickly, I'm sure.
Yeah. So after being in for a little bit, all of the other expenses came to light, and they essentially became house poor at that point.
Yeah.
So they were talking about how the emotions got into it, because I think buying a home, especially you got a family, you have kids, you're seeing a future, is a very emotional process. So you think about, oh, well, yeah, it's going to be tight, but
I'll get that raise and it'll be fine.
It's always the but.
The but. Yeah.
And that's a really tough place to be in. So I think there's a lesson to be learned here about with the pre-approval process, with the max budget. It's okay not to spend that.
Oh, absolutely. The banks want you to.
Right.
And I think that's something that maybe not a lot of people think about,
mm-hmm,
in that they are sitting there saying, well, if they borrow 350, the interest on 350 is better for us than interest on 300.
Right.
So, yeah, if we think that they can swing it at all, and this is part of what happened in the subprime crisis in 2008. Those numbers were really inflated. But especially here locally, as prices have increased so much and you start to get desperate, I've been outbid. You know, those people came in with cash. Those people, you know, and, well, what's the top of our budget? Let's just put it in. You can very easily miss some of the expenses that you're not thinking about.
And there are so many, too.
So many with a home.
You know, we don't think about those things. We're just seeing the big number.
Right.
And you made a really good point, especially right now, the way the housing market has been over the past year and a half. People are throwing out money like crazy, and it puts you in a really big bind. And a lot of people have that kind of knee-jerk reaction of, oh my gosh, we just got outbid.
And we've been outbid on the last five.
So we're just all in up front. We're just going for it.
Yep.
And man, that can really do some damage, I think.
Well, especially if you get into the home and there's repairs you didn't know you were going to have to make, or, oh, I thought I was fine with that wallpaper, but I'm not. I can't look at it one more day, and then that's an extra $500 at Home Depot. Or, I'm now spending X on yard maintenance that I wasn't budgeting in.
Right.
Or insurance, or the HVAC randomly goes out, which was supposed to be fine, but, you know, it passed inspection, but now I've got $7,000 worth of HVAC expenses.
I think that's the only constant is we need to know that something's always going to come up.
Always.
And I know we talk about having that kind of emergency fund for some big things.
Right.
But I get it too. So, and I know, you know, Brian's not here, but we talk about this a lot because Brian bought a home with the intention of, you know, investing money into it, fixing it up, which he's doing. And I mean, I have a home that's close to 90 years old. It needs work.
So, and it's significantly harder with some of these older homes.
Yeah.
Because maybe they used a different type of plumbing, or maybe they used, you know, lead-based paint or whatever it is.
And the part that people don't understand is a lot of these home projects and things that kind of get out of the DIY range, it's not like $300 here, $500 there. It's more like $1,500 here, $3,800 here. It's, you know, it's a big chunk of money.
After you already put $500 yourself trying to do it yourself, and then you have to hire somebody to do it.
So obviously, taking all this in, you can see how people could overdo it on the house purchase.
I will say that this is not gender specific, but in a couple, if you're buying a home, there's one person who generally sees all the good things and one person who sees all the bad things. You know, that seems we see that dynamic a lot. And it's important, you know, and my dad was always really good at this, and this is one of the reasons why people trusted him so much, is he would just flat out tell you, like, look, that home's gonna have problems. Yeah. Yes, you can. You know, I know the bank told you 350. You spend more than 300, we're gonna be invading your investment account, and you're gonna pay taxes and penalty and all these things. So it's really important to have just an open conversation and say, hey, if that happens, what are we going to do? Are you going back to work? Are you taking on a second job? Are you, you know, giving up guitar lessons? Are you doing whatever, you know, so that you know what you're looking at going into it? And it's, home purchases are tough because you're right. You see your family there.
Yeah.
And you assume that, well, in a couple of years, my salary is going to be higher. This is going to be easier. A couple of years from now, you may not have the same job. It may be worse. Right. And nobody really focuses on that it may be worse.
Yeah. Well, and it may also be good, too, right, to have, you know, kind of a third party in that mix to really, like, cut through the, you know, the butterflies, the roses, the all the stuff, and give you just a straight up honest opinion of, hey, this is probably not a good idea.
Right. Well, and to just make you aware of all the things that you might not be. So I think a good example would be like with that 350 home. Let's say we had a retirement account with them that had $200,000 in it, you know, and they were like, okay, well, if worse come to worse, we can always pull from our retirement. And then it takes somebody to say, well, you're not 59 yet. So if you pull from your retirement, there's a 10% penalty on that, plus whatever income tax. It's not just from my retirement.
It's not like you're withdrawing from an ATM.
Right. Yeah. And so I think having those conversations, I kind of always say whatever you get pre-approved for, cut it by 10% and only look at houses that are there. Because I think that's the other problem that we see is people get pre-approved and then they use that as their starting point.
Yeah.
you know,
and then go up because go then up. What you said, oh, we'll talk them down.
We'll talk them
we
down.
We can get down to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's dangerous.
It's dangerous. Yeah.
But I think, and I've been guilty of that too. It's hard not to. Like I said, it's emotional process, very emotionally driven. And there is a sense of urgency, a sense of panic, especially now with how competitive the market is.
Right.
So
that house is in the school district I want to be in, and there's no more houses ever going to be available in that school district.
Right.
We've got to buy it now. We'll make it work.
Yeah.
And it could cost you years of extra work versus retiring when you want to.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Anonymous Person.
Yeah, me.
Thank you for sending that in. Hopefully everyone can kind of take something from that.
Yeah.
And then...
Oh, I thought we were switching for a second to my anonymous thing. So no, that one was not me.
That was not Peter.
No, I've got but a smaller scale one.
How much have you spent on snow cones before?
Oh, good God. So many snow cones. Okay.
Now we're transitioning into Peter's financial confessions.
So we started the travel ball team for Ben and Ian this year, which... You know it's expensive,
yeah,
but you don't really know. So whatever dollar amount a coach quotes to you, double it, make it more. Because what you don't realize is the gate fees to get into all these tournaments, the, oh, my God, it's so hot. Let me just go get another drink. Mom, I want something. You know, just fine, go do it. So we have spent more money on snow cones this year, and – you know, so we'll be out on a weekend. We're over at the baseball field, kind of like your golf tournament.
Yeah.
6 hours waiting in between games.
And that's a long time when you're out on the ball field like that, and I remember because I used to do that, you're just sitting there. You're there. There's nowhere to go.
Might as well be eating.
Yeah.
And so the one that's over behind Hands-On Museum, Ridgeview Raptors area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So one of these snow cone places came, and they know exactly what they're doing. Buy this cup, and your refills are only $5. I hate the word only, and my wife knows that because she'll say, those things are only. I'm like, it's still money. But your refills are only $5. And then I sit over there, and I watch my wife and my oldest son, who are not playing, so they don't have anything to do other than watch and cheer, going back and forth, finish. Okay, well, you go take the cup and get yours now. Finish, you know, going back and forth. We had to have gotten, over the course of that weekend, it had to be $100 in snow cones, easily. Wow. And that's not counting Gatorades and Diet Cokes and the $15 to get in as a parent and... Henry, who...
It's $15 to get in?
Yeah, as long as you're 14 or older. So Henry was 13 for this weekend. Kate was like, I'm not paying for him to get in. So criminal confession time, we snuck him in. you know, and that's on top of the team having to pay. You know, I think our team entrance fee for that tournament was $83, mm-hmm. which we had built into... what we had charged all the parents as part up front. But some of these things, you know, kids' activities will drain you. And I think that's true wherever you're at. Like if you're at a UT football game and the guy's walking up the stairs with the drink you want, oh, I'm paying for that convenience all day long. I'm not going back into the concourse if I don't have to, especially if your kids are whiny. I'm just hungry. I'm paying for silence. I'm not paying for Diet Coke or chips at that point.
Yeah, you're paying for peace silence. Of mind at that point. Yeah. Yep. That's hard, too, because you're right. You think about any kind of events like that. It's almost similar, if you really stop and think about it, to what we were talking about with the house stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You have the upfront cost that you're aware of.
My tickets are X. My hotel is X. And you know my going in, X.
Yes, this is what I'm spending. But it's what comes after that's so hard to, I think, for people to wrap their heads around. Because they make that first number, that benchmark number, and they're like, oh, we're golden. We're good. And then they don't realize all the things. They don't think they're going to spend $100 on snow cones.
On snow cones.
Which is literally nothing but liquid sugar and ice.
Right. And like the T-shirts from the events. And fortunately, we haven't had to do this. But the T-shirts for an 8U baseball tournament are like $20 a piece. Well, you got two kids on the team. Well, there's $40 in t-shirts that won't be worn again.
Yeah.
They'll be worn maybe through one baseball season.
And then they'll end up at Goodwill.
Exactly. So, you know, all of a sudden you've gone in with a plan and your plan was bad.
Yeah.
Like you need to over budget. But, you know, that's true. Even I had a friend who just went up to Camden Yards. And he was like, I wanted to get my kid a t-shirt from seeing the Orioles play.
Mm-hmm.
$40 for a kid's t-shirt.
Wow.
He's like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who do. You see a lot of those kids in t-shirts,
yeah,
probably spending money that they didn't have to begin with.
Yeah. Well, and I think my son is really into jerseys, which is unfortunate because they're way more expensive than t-shirts.
Right.
And he just loves, like, old school classic jerseys, and it's painful to have people buy those because you know that he's only going to wear it for maybe a year because he's going to be way outgrown next year. So it's tough. Those are tough decisions to be made.
It's yeah, but hey, all my buddies have them. All mm-hmm. my, you know, you fall trap.
Yeah,
you know,
you fall trap.
And bless those parents who are the hardline parents who are like, nope, you know. Give me cover to also be like, nope. It's like, no, Jeremy is being a mean dad too.
Yeah.
You know, so if we banded together as parents, maybe that would be.
Make a Facebook group, yeah, mean parents.
Mean parents. But yeah, no, sporting events will do it.
Yeah.
And quickly.
Well, I appreciate you sharing some of that. And I also think it's really neat to find some kind of a invisible bridge between the two, because we've got something so big as like a, you know, a home purchase and something so small as a snow cone purchase, but there's similar mentalities that go into it.
Right.
So we're going to crack the code eventually. We're going to figure it out. But I hope that some folks send in some other things, other financial confessions. Again, we won't use your name. It's completely anonymous. Just send those to connect@AFIAdvisors.com. Be sure to go check out our website. Follow us on all of our social channels. We like to interact and see what's going on with people. But for now, Peter, hopefully if you don't go to jail for smuggling in a child into a baseball tournament, we'll be back later and we can chat some more about these confessions.
Yeah.
All right.
After I get in trouble for taking snacks into the movie theater, too.
Oh, no. We got to cut it on that. Oh, I hope everyone has a good day and we will catch you back here later. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Bullseye Podcast. Do you want to sponsor the show or maybe even be a guest? Contact us at connect@AFIAdvisors.com to get the conversation started. Thank you for all of the continued support.